Christianity was frequently perceived as being, in a sense, idolatrous because of all the imagery and the iconography that was connected with it, and the issue of the Trinity in certain cases, Islam usually got off better. And many rabbis were willing to accept it, as it were, as another form of a monotheistic religion. And as such, it's a positive phenomenon, even though if you leave Judaism and become a Muslim, clearly you are a sinner. And so they're not supporting opting out of the Israelite faith and embracing this other religion, but there was a willingness to recognize it. For instance, Maimonides would claim that if a person, let us say in North Africa, this is where it was happening in his day, the Jews of Morocco at one time were forced to embrace Islam or to simply be exiled, and Maimonides actually wrote them a long letter trying to console them. And he tells them, look, if you can leave and not convert to Islam, that is preferable. But if you do have to convert to Islam, you are not an idolater. And you can still have a place in the next world. And to not consider it, and this is the most important thing, since you're not an idolater, this is not a cause for martyrdom. You need not give up your life to prevent conversion to Islam. And so clearly there was a willingness to recognize that certainly Islam, and in certain cases Christianity, had a role to play, as it were, in the religious development of mankind as we know it. Now, different periods and varying personal proclivities would obviously lead some to stress a more particularistic nature of Judaism. Others would opt for a more universal one. I mentioned Judah Halevi. He was probably the most pronounced espouser of that particularistic approach. He stressed not only the unique character of the people of Israel, but even of the land of Israel. He wrote an ode to Zion, which is one of the most moving poems on Jewish attachment to the land. And it's recited by many communities to this day on the 9th of Av, the day that commemorates the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in Jerusalem by the Romans. Early modernity saw a move back to universalism, especially among leaders of the Jewish Enlightenment, and we've discussed this already. They realized that the fruits of emancipation could only be reaped by removing separatist tendencies that derive from an enhanced nationalism. And Reform Judaism, picking up on this sensitivity, also stressed the universal component, and it's not surprising that early Reform was decidedly non-Zionist, and at times even anti-Zionist. It's only in the 20th century, and even before the Second World War, but even more so after the Holocaust, that this sensitivity to Zionism and to nationalism and particularism would be changed. It would be reevaluated. And today, the Reform movement is one of the most pro-Zionist movements, or is certainly a pro-Zionist movement within Judaism. So it has come back to a particularism of sorts. And all this really brings us back to our first lecture. And the question of Judaism as a religion or Judaism as a people. And the answer seems to be that both are correct, but that different generations and different personalities, for a variety of reasons, frequently opted for one at the expense of the other. Even the ancient Roman historian Tacitus describes his fear of the conversion of some Romans to Judaism. Even he realized that this move was not merely a religious one. It had definite political and social overtones as well. If you leave the Roman religion and join Judaism, you're joining another community, not just another religion. But of course, in his case, negating aspects of paganism was also denying the Roman gods and the Roman state. So it was a lack of patriotism. Today, this is not the case. Nothing is to prevent a convert from remaining a totally loyal citizen to whatever country he or she happens to choose to live. And yet, the very same convert, when he chants or she chants the daily prayers, will allude to our God and the God of our fathers. Convert becomes a total member of the community.
We hope you have enjoyed these lectures from our Great Courses series. Our courses are available to order online. Visit our website at www.teach12.com. Or call our customer service representatives at 1-800-TEACH-12. That's 1-800-832-2412. Thank you very much.